Good evening, and welcome to the friendly confines of the Los Osos Middle School Library, where it's very cozy on a rainy night. We had three items, actually. We discussed in closed session. The board met to discuss the superintendent evaluation process, also to discuss an employee dismissal or discipline, and also an anticipated litigation item. Is there any, is there a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Yes, there is. And item 5.02 is the approval of the minutes of October 3rd, 2017.
I move the approval of the minutes.
Second.
There's a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And moving on, we have an FFA student presentation. Very much looking forward to this.
Yes, I'd like to introduce a very special young lady. She is a senior at San Luis Obispo High School. She has qualified for the national championships through FFA in prepared public speaking in Indianapolis, Indiana, on Monday. And so next week, Greta will represent San Luis Obispo High School in those national championships, and we fully expect her to come out on top, no pressure. But you'll see tonight why I say that. She's quite an impressive young lady. She also sits as a participant on our Superintendent Student Senate. Her feedback is always appreciated, and I've just come to know her to be just an outstanding young adult. And she went to Bishop's Peak, Laguna Middle School, and now Slo High, with aspirations to attend Cal Poly or UC Berkeley. So, Greta, thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Greta, I understand that you would invite our questions if we have any after, for purposes of practicing, but also for answering.
Yes, that would be absolutely wonderful. Any questions regarding either my presence, the competition itself, or my issue that come up during my speech, I would greatly accept and appreciate you if you asked. Once again, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to practice. Okay. Luis Garibaldi, the largest mandarin grower in Peru, prepares for another massive harvest production, ultimately exporting 70% of his crop to the United States and European Union. However, Luis is aware that 30% will not be of the right size, color, or shape, ultimately preventing sale of his produce. Roughly 4,000 miles away, it is lettuce season in Salinas Valley. As trailers filled with lettuce begin their journeys to the consumer, a truckload containing 20 cubic yards of improperly labeled and packaged lettuce and spinach is sent to the landfill. Unfortunately, stories like these are not unique. Roughly 30 to 40% of our food supply is wasted annually in the United States between harvest and the consumer. With our population rapidly expanding, it is essential for the health of our society and quality of our environment to focus efforts on drastically minimizing food waste on all levels of our food production chain. While food waste is evident throughout food production, it regularly originates on the farm. Approximately 6 billion pounds of produce are left in the fields each year due to labor shortages, weather, pests, and disease. Mark Wright, farming operation manager of Feliz Farms in Hollister, California, identifies poor market conditions caused by oversupply to be another glaring reason for why products are left in the fields. Farmers provide their product to suppliers depending on the needs dictated by retail customers. From experience, Wright finds that if production happens to be greater than accounted for, the item will go to waste unless an alternate avenue is found. Similarly, inadequate post-harvest operations, including the handling, storage, and transport of commodities, can amount to an additional 8% of loss before consumer waste. Losses on this level are a large representation of the wastage of resources, including land, water, labor, and power used to generate food, and also reveals the deficiencies within a country's food supply. It is crucial to understand, both as producers and consumers, that additional 8% of loss wastes much more than just the product itself. Comparatively, at packing and manufacturing facilities, retail standards begin to play a large role in determining where the product goes and how it is utilized. Size, color, weight, shape, and blemish level, as distinguished by strict retail regulations and consumer standards, can impede market sale. The United States Department of Food and Agriculture provide descriptive terminology and sequential numbers, such as extra fancy, fancy, and U.S. number one to grade products. Most that do not meet certain size or shape criteria, which is essential for packaging, are disposed of by means of landfill. This, combined with possible damage due to improper storage methods or mishandling, can lead to a total loss of one-third of a crop, an alarming amount when 1 in 7 Americans are food insecure. In the final stages of our food production chain, strict retail regulations are reinvigorated by unspoken consumer cosmetic standards. Society tends to eat with their eyes and demands perfection. In the U.S. alone, 10% of the available food supply is wasted at the retail level and 20% at home, creating an average annual loss of $160 billion. Rather than ending on hungry families' plates, this waste ends in the landfill. Uneducated consumers often overbuy and improperly store food, take expiration dates too literally, and forget to eat leftovers, accumulating in the average American family of four, wasting close to $1,500 in food annually. Thankfully, there are many unique and proactive ways to reduce waste from farm to the consumer. Creative educational campaigns have been developed through the USDA and nonprofit organizations such as the Save the Food commercials or Foodkeeper mobile application to raise awareness and encourage consumers, restaurants, and businesses to be conscious of unnecessary waste. However, while focusing on consumer education is vital, it is a challenging an expensive feat to change the wasteful habits of an entire population. Instead, efforts should be concentrated on production, where practices can be changed. By creating a government-supported advisory committee, suppliers, retailers, and businesses can communicate efficiently and have pre-established avenues to distribute excess food products that would instead go to waste. These institutes can host annual conventions for all sectors of the food production chains to investigate initiatives, target specific obstacles, and present research, similar to the industry roundtable on food maximization that was hosted by the Global Cold Chain Alliance this past August. Ultimately, this advisory committee will act as a liaison between food relief organizations, waste management companies, and businesses involved in food production to implement reduction measures and ensure all factions are held responsible for minimizing waste. Globally, we produce enough food to feed 10 billion people. We may not have to exponentially increase our production to cater to our rapidly expanding population. Rather, by collectively adopting these measures to waste less, we can simultaneously feed more. The 42 million food insecure Americans deserve to have healthy, sustainable food on their plates every single day. At the same time, producers such as Luis Garibaldi and Mark Wright should never be forced to throw away unsold or blemished products. Food waste is undeniably an international issue affecting us, all of us, right now. So together, let us begin improving a world of waste, one step at a time. Thank you. I'm open for questions, comments, anything. I'd also like to mention one thing before comments begin, is I totally did not give you any background information about this competition at all. So to give you a little idea of what I'm competing in next week, prepared public speaking is a contest in which the individual chooses a agriculture issue related to current issues that they research, and then they write a 6 to 8 minute speech on, memorize it, and then have to answer 5 minutes of open questions. I first kind of got into this topic freshman year, have done multiple drafts and revisions of it, and somehow I'm here today. So, yeah. If there's any questions, I'd love to take them.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I wonder if you could elaborate more on the expiration date thing. I don't want to mention any names, but I know someone who's very specific about expiration.
Expiration dates commonly have consumers very worried that the minute their food passes that expiration date, it immediately means that their food is no longer viable for consumption. However, this is not true, and this comes with the USDA's lack of information for the consumers and misinterpretation on consumer end. As of right now, they're creating a Date Labeling Food Act, which will solidify all expiration dates to expires on or best if used by. Best if used by will be found on most vegetables, stored items, cartons, and commodities such as that, that essentially only give when the product's best quality essentially ends. However, expires on are for more perishable goods such as dairy and meats. Both or all commodities do not expire or immediately spoil on these dates. It's simply just a matter of informing the consumer and ensuring that we can reduce waste from this portion.
Thank you. I'm going to pass that information on, and your presentation skills were phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Unger.
So I think it was last week, wasn't it, Dr. Prater, that you and I were having a discussion about technology and food production, was it not? And I think one of the things that you and I talked about was minimizing land use by maximizing technology and production. Is that pretty much? So I'm wondering how you feel about that and whether you think, A, it would reduce the amount of resources that that are required to grow optimal amounts of food, and B, whether that in some ways with more strict production capabilities, it gets rid of that eating with your eyes.
Yes, definitely as we move forward with our advancing world of technology, we find that farms are increasingly forced to innovate in order to keep up with the demands of society. And with this, we find that farms are taking on new aspects of vertical farming and automated harvesting that actually reduce waste by a twofold. Essentially, you can program automated harvesting to ensure that it harvests all your crops. However, there are some downsides to this, and machinery sometimes always doesn't live up to its expectations. But you can essentially automate or harvest this entire crop, sort it as well, and then sell your entire crop rather than leaving a portion of it in your field. This helps also with land space, ensuring that you're using all of your land and your resources that you put into your food and not just wasting a certain portion of it and making a profit out of the other portion. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I have three questions.
Okay.
The first one is, when you're talking about food that's left in the fields mm-hmm. or on the trees, and it's wasted that way, which was a staggering number. Was it 6 billion?
6 billion.
Have you, in your research, touched on anything with gleaning and the gleaning movement?
Yes. The gleaning movement has definitely grown exponentially in these past few years with our recognition of the amount of waste that we've essentially researched and found. And food banks and food recovery programs who focus on feeding the hungry are also taking up these gleaning practices quite rapidly because they find that volunteers are willing to go out into the fields and pick this leftover produce that is completely viable for human consumption, usually just does not meet USDA or consumer standards that usually involve aesthetic abilities of the produce. So gleaning, especially in San Luis Obispo County, has grown a lot with Glean Slow, but on a national scale as well.
Great, thank you. And then my second question was, in your presentation, you talked about a government agency that would bring together, it sounds like, the producers, the retailers, mm-hmm. the processors. Doesn't the USDA do some of that already?
Here's the issue. With our USDA, they are focused on many aspects of agriculture. They're not just focused on food waste. They have organizations such or programs set up, such as the Food Keeper app, essentially, which is mainly geared towards consumers. And they also have a food recovery or a food waste challenge that they've developed for businesses and farms to essentially join and reduce their waste. However, they do not communicate between all factions of the production chain. And that's where essentially we can reduce our waste by a great amount if we simply just communicate where our produce is going to, in case the market is flooded, or if there's an avenue that a farm has leftover produce that can immediately go to food shelters or donation centers. We need an overarching organization that can be in charge of this, and the USDA, unfortunately, does not have this at the moment.
And my last question is, you know, you talked about food waste just going to a landfill somewhere. Mm-hmm. Did you get into the area of composting at all? And, just tell me about that if you got into that.
Yeah. Area. So as of right now, nationally, there is no measures on sending or prohibiting green waste to go directly to the landfill. However, in California, measures have been taken by Governor Brown to ensure that businesses, farms, and any organizations that produce green waste no longer send it directly to landfills and go to composting. In San Luis Obispo County specifically, we'll be seeing the development of an anaerobic digester, the Hitachi Zosen Inova, in the next couple of years, that is essentially going to turn 33,000 tons of green waste and material from Slo County into 22,000 tons of liquid compost through anaerobic digestion, as well as give power to 600 homes in Slo County. So this is a great avenue for diverting waste and diverting food products from the landfill.
It's very impressive, Greta.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed, Greta. It was a beautifully written presentation.
Thank you very
much. Very passionately given, and a very important topic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you're going to rock that.
I appreciate it.
Moving on to our student representatives to the board.
On behalf of our Ag Department, our San Luis Ag Department, we would just like to inform the school board that we're hosting an event this weekend known as our annual Scare Farm for our community members, and part of our proceeds and the profit that we make from this event will be going to fire victims that are directly or fire victims in Santa Rosa County, Sonoma, and Napa Valley who are involved in agriculture will be donating part of our money and profits directly towards those ag departments up there to help relieve victims of the fire.
And the Scare Farm will be?
This event is at Taylor Field and up at our school farm. This is Saturday at, I believe it opens at 5 p.m., if I remember correctly, and the Scare Farm, I believe, opens at 8. And it is a fee to enter the Scare Farm, but obviously we're not taking any of that money, and that's going directly to the fire victims. So if you'd like to spread that word or attend yourself, we would be glad to have you. So, thank you.
Thank you again, Greta. Best wishes. Hello, and looks like Ratika is going to grab the mic.
Perfect. All right. Good evening, everyone. Hopefully, everyone's having a good day. So the past two weeks ago, we had our homecoming week. We had a school meeting that week. The rest of that week was pretty hectic, to say the least. We had a dress-up day every single day, and the amount of spirit that was shown throughout the week by every single one of the classes was immense. It, in my opinion, and arguably was one of our most successful homecomings. On Friday, we had a homecoming parade where all four of the classes had their own trailer, and we got many clubs. I think we had 7 or 8 clubs participating in the parade itself. GSA, Auto Club, Reach Club, Key Club, were all walking in the parade and showing our community that Slo High likes getting involved in its school and has all these diverse passions. That night at the football game, we had our halftime ceremonies where we announced our king and queen. Steven Zagrodny, who is an avid theater character, very well known throughout our school, and Lindsay McLeod won Best Actor and Actress as per our theme, Hollywood. Lindsay McLeod is an ASB. She's our secretary this year. Very involved with mental health and one of the social media gurus in ASB. She runs the accounts wonderfully. I just wanted to add that because she's awesome. That night, or next Saturday night, we had our homecoming dance, which had a number of 792 attendees. That's over half of our school. It took me, I think, 45 minutes just to get into the dance. I showed up when it started. I got in at 8:45 because that's how many people we had. And it is our biggest dance in history, and we just want to continue building the hype, I guess, around these dances and making them better each year. Last week was our week to cool down because this week is Mental Wellness Week. And something that ASB has discovered is that mental health is one thing that's really, really hard to address. There was an article that was released last week before this week by Our Expressions, which is our local newspaper at the school, talking about ASB's approach on mental health. And that's something that Lily and I, who are mainly planning the week, took into account because people don't want to be singled out regarding mental health. So I went on air on our Tiger News Network yesterday and talked about how ASB's goal is not to single out those struggling with mental health. It's to provide resources and make aware all students, should they choose to, of the resources that our campus and our community has to offer to everyone. So, and on Thursday we have a resource fair where community organizations and campus organizations are going to be in the quad providing information to every student who goes up and asks for it. We've been trying our hardest to encourage all students to go up, regardless of their mental state, to go up and learn more about mental health because it's something that everyone should be aware of and have their eyes open for anyone that may be struggling with mental health because Slo High has lost its number of students to mental health, and I'm trying my hardest and ASB is trying their hardest to make sure this ends, that never happens again. We have students as happy as they can be on campus. Some of the organizations include Transitions Mental Health, RISE, The Center, Planned Parenthood, Big Brothers Big Sisters, and we have a couple of other organizations that are still to confirm. But something that I really want to emphasize is the fact that we're really trying to make these resources as available as possible to all students. On another note, something that I've talked about recently is the spirit drops that we have this year. I'm trying to overhaul our spirit gear on campus. So we've taken, I'm not sure if you guys have heard this, but Supreme is a company based in LA, or actually might be New York, that releases new gear basically every month. But it's a limited quantity of gear. So what we've decided to do is do something called Tiger Drops, where we release new Tiger gear every month, but it's a limited quantity. And it just gets students excited to represent themselves, but it makes it really cool because it's exclusive. Yesterday, our water bottles arrived. We have Nalgene water bottles with our logo on them. We have iPhone wallet cases where you can put your cards in. We have new stickers. We have a shirt coming out. And the whole idea behind this is getting students involved and excited for showing their school pride in a different way than just wearing the same sweater that everyone else has. So that's been my baby recently. I've been trying to make sure that ends up well. Today we had our, during lunch, the superintendent senators met during lunch to talk about the survey, the Youth Truth Survey that we've partnered with, and how we're going to implement that in our classes. We've decided that next week on Friday we're going to give the survey out to all math classes, and they'll have like a 20-minute time period to take that survey and basically give feedback on the school. We will have a video made sometime this week and partly through next week so that all students are aware of the survey and the impact it actually has on the campus, because as Dr. Prater can say, it really means a lot to him and us, I guess, that hearing everyone's voice is important in making sure everyone goes to the school that they see the best it can be. So that'll be on Friday, and then we also have a student congress meeting that Wednesday that we can try and publicize that further. Regarding sports, you might be wondering why I have a paw on my cheek. I came from a tailgate, which is at our ASB director's house, who lives right across Mission Prep. Today is our away game, a volleyball, girls volleyball away game at Mission. So Mr. Johnson had the idea to have a tailgate at his house for all students. The athletics department would pay for admission for the students that came to the tailgate. So that's where I came from. That's where I'm going to go right after we're done here. But our sports teams have been doing wonderfully. Right now, our water polo team had their senior night today. They're 21-5 currently and going to be 22-5 if they win this game. Tennis is 16-1. They had their senior night today, too. They're playing for the league title today. And then football is doing really well financially. They're making the school a lot of money. Excuse me. They have their senior night next Friday against Templeton. Hopefully we'll get the W there. Cross country boys is second in Division 4, and the girls cross country is third. So our teams are doing really well. It just depends on how you look at, how you define well. So that's my report. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ritik. And Sierra.
Hi, I'm Sierra. I'm from Morro Bay. So a little bit going on at Morro Bay, we just started our annual dodgeball tournament, which is a huge thing at Morro Bay. We have, I believe, 13 teams. Today we had our administrator slash teacher team take on one of our best teams, which is a group of surfer juniors, and it was extremely intense. We had a lot of people come to the big gym to watch it, and the juniors came through and won, thankfully, but the administrators kept them on their toes for sure. Last week we had our jazzercise activity, which is really fun. We had our neon colors showing and lots of leg warmers and Cyndi Lauper. In the quad. Next week, we're going to start our Halloween. We're going to do it before Halloween because once Halloween happens, people are kind of over Halloween, don't really want to do the candy thing. So Halloween, we're going to do things such as Mummy Monday, where we're going to have people wrap their friends in toilet paper, and Candy Count Tuesday, we're going to get a huge thing of candy corn and fill it into a giant glass jar, and whoever guesses the right amount gets it and probably a trip to the dentist appointment, like dentist. We're also going to do things such as the Pumpkin Bowling and Thriller Friday, where we asked our Dance Fusion team to do a thriller dance during the quad to get people stoked for Halloween the following week. And then for Halloween, we're going to do our annual costume contest and try to get trick-or-treat going, because high schoolers don't really get the chance to do so, and we really want candy still. So we're going to try to get that going at school. Going on in sports, we had our pool opening 2 weeks ago, which some of you guys were there, and got to jump in the pool. It was extremely fun. Our girls and boys water polo and swim team got to jump in and taste the water for the first time. And then we had our first home match in the game last week with our boys water polo team, and they won Santa Maria 9-3. So that was really exciting. First game, taking the win. Our girls' golf team today went to their CIF qualifying match. We had 6 girls out of, I believe, 30 girls that go to the qualifying, and this determines whether they go to Ventura for the actual CIF match. So we're waiting to see where they are in this rank later tonight. School stuff going on. We have our annual college knowledge night coming up where students are given the opportunity, juniors and seniors, to learn about the UC system as well as the public school system or the state system and private system as well, and learn how to fill out the FAFSA and that sort of thing, as well as getting community service hours and just figuring out how to get where they want to go, as well as learning about the Quest of Promise. And the Quest of Promise trip is this Friday, so a majority of our seniors will be taking that on and learning how to sign up for classes and qualify for that. Recently in our classes, one of our English teachers, Mr. Gotzi, got together with Mindshift, which is a podcast company which is affiliated with NPR, and Mindshift interviewed Mr. Gotzi in his class last spring. In order to describe how podcasts can help with literary skills for teachers across the country. And so we're finally watching that come into play right now and see the podcast come out with students' voices as well as Mr. Gotzi's, which is really cool. And then our English and French classes had, I'm not sure how to say this because I never learned French, but it's Jean-Michel Canceau, who's a French oceanographer. Yeah, she's our French teacher, but he is an oceanographer / environmentalist from France.
He's the son of Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah, who did a Skype interview with some of our French and English students, and he got to answer questions in French and English about the environment and the responsibility needed to take care of the oceans and the planet in general, and how important our generation is. So it's really interesting for them and really nice that he took time out of his day to give our students the opportunity here at Morro Bay. So that's what's going on in Morro Bay's Corner.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sierra. Thank you, Ritik. You're welcome to stay with us, or you can go to tailgate parties or homework, whatever appeals to you. Thank you both very much. And we are moving on to correspondence. Mrs. Sheffer reported that she had a bit of correspondence that, well, it says here that that Slow County Office of Education sent to Ms. Sheffer an enclosed ballot. And is there anything else anyone wanted to report? Or Mrs. Shepherd, do you care to elaborate on that or no?
Well, I don't.
No. Okay.
That was missent because I am not a voting representative to SLC USD's representing the board to the Slo County School Boards Association. So I sent that to, I forwarded it to Dr. Prater because I'm not the person who should have received it.
I will need to check my notes, but aren't you the representative to SLO CSBA?
I don't think so.
I will check. Whomever of you is the representative to SLO CSBA is the one who would vote on that ballot. We'll make sure it gets to the
thank
right
you.
One.
Thank you for that clarification okay. from both of you. And... Yes.
Well, I just had a question. So we have a representative that will vote on the District 2, the District 4, and the at-large candidates?
Yeah, they're each district in the county
right.
has one of its board members named to serve on the SLO County School Boards Association. And that association as a whole, each of those people get to vote on all of the candidates who are presented each area that they represent. So you don't, it's an at-large selection, so you vote on each one of those.
So we look forward to hearing back from you, Mrs. Holmes, about who has that opportunity or responsibility.
Are they going to receive any input direction from this board? I mean, I actually know some of these candidates. I mean, I know at least one candidate. I just don't know. I mean,
the ballots are due on
they're coming
due
right
really
up
soon. Yes.
Yes.
Let me check the notes to make sure that I have the right persons whose responsibility it will be to take this vote, and then perhaps that person could talk with clerk, the president and clerk. We can't have you talk outside of the meeting with all seven of you, but
right.
Unless there is some general input that you might have about the kind of person we'd want to be selected for this committee. I'm not sure what other guidance I might help you with.
Thank you. I'm glad this is on here so this came to our attention. Thank you very much.
We'll have one more meeting before the ballots.
Right. And I think because they may be dealing with an issue of district alignments, which includes happens at Cayucas Elementary, I think it's kind of key that we have some discussion of this.
Yeah, I will look at that particular ballot and get more information. I'm not familiar with. I know we have two representatives representing our district, one from the coast and one in the city. And in terms of this next ballot, I'll make sure I dig into it and bring it back to you guys. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. And moving on to public comment.
We have one person who signed up for public comment. Raquel, come on down.
Hello. I wanted to welcome you to Los Osos Middle School and to our fantastic library. If you look around, you can see all the great things that are going on. One of the things that we're doing is on Fridays, our library tech, Cassandra Hodgkin, she plans a lunchtime activity and students sign up. And this month we are doing Dia de los Muertos activities. So I have art club and we kind of do that together, and we have different activities on Fridays. And she also has a Lego club on Fridays in here during lunch. So this is a busy place. Our Dia de los Muertos activity culminates in an altar or ofrenda that we put up in the multipurpose room, and we've been doing this for a few years. And this year we've been invited to participate by the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art to display our ofrenda. So we're going to be doing that on November 4th. And so if you can come and see that, that would be great. I believe it's from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
Here?
No, at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art downtown. And it's on the corner of Broad and I don't know what that other street is over there. It's just, I guess it would be
yes.
Monterey.
Yeah. Yeah, Monterey.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other thing that I wanted to let you know about, I know Ms. Holmes sent out an announcement. The Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival is going on, and this is our third year participating. The first year I had four groups of students collaborate on boards, surfboards, and last year I had two groups of students, and then I also did a board because I thought, if I'm having them do that, I need to be doing it too. And so that was really successful, and then this is our third year. So I also did a board, and I had two more groups do boards. So if you are out and about in Morro Bay, you can see our surfboards. I have a student board at Cookie Crock Market and another board at the Coffee Pot Restaurant down on the Embarcadero. And then my board is at the Wee Shack Restaurant. And so those will be on display through the end of November. And then we have our big sale on December, I believe it's 2nd. It's a Saturday at the Inn at Morro Bay, and that's from 10 to 4 o'clock. And that's a really fun sale, a really nice event. They do a great job. And if we sell our boards, Part of the proceeds go to support Morro Bay and Bloom, which is a gardening group. In the past, it's also gone to Project Surf Camp. And then part of the proceeds come back to us, and it goes to our art club. So we've been using that money actually to buy, to do fun things for the kids, but also to buy more screen printing equipment so we can print T-shirts. And then some of our boards, the event has expanded this year, and some of the boards from previous years that haven't sold are also on display. So in San Luis Obispo, we have boards on display at Milestone Tavern, at Creaky Tiki, at Mother's Tavern. My board from last year is in the window at Mother's Tavern. And then we have a board up in Cambria at Twin Coyotes Winery. So if you can come and support our event or see the great artwork, I'm really proud of our students. We had an opening at Forever Stoke Gallery on the end of September, and so their work is shown with all the other artists that are participating in the festival. So it's a really great opportunity for them.
Thank you, Rahil. I did have a chance to see them at Forever Stoked, and they were, I guess as a surfer would say, awesome. So they were fantastic.
Thank you.
Did you have a comment, Mr.?
Okay, and I just wanted to plug one last thing. You see all our setup around campus for Area 55, and that's taking place Friday and Saturday night, this Friday and Saturday night from 6 to 9.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
And the library is gorgeous. It is a gorgeous library.
Thanks.
Thank you. We are moving on to business and budget update. Oh, no, I'm so Judy.
I'm sorry. I don't use the papers because I don't like to use an entire piece of paper just to say I want to speak. So, sorry. Hi, my name is Judy Neuhauser. I'm here to speak about the CalCard expenses that were brought to your that are regularly brought to your board for approval. And I believe all of you received Ryan Pinkerton's response to a request to help us understand what these types of expenses were for. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Good. You know, I am very pleased, Ryan, that you have started to look at these expenses and work on being mindful of these types of expenses in the future. Kind of as background, I'd like the board to know that there are many government entities that use taxpayer money that have policies that explicitly forbid taxpayer money be spent on meals, even for things like meetings or working lunches. For example, the National Science Foundation and U.S. Geological Survey, for example, they require that all their employees and their visitors put their own money into a pot, so to speak, so the group can order in lunch or coffee or muffins, whatever they wish, whenever those people are attending working lunches or dinners or meetings in which they wish to have food other than what they brought from their home. In other words, no departmental funds are used to provide food or refreshment for any meetings, including when they host outside visitors. And they see that as their duty in protecting taxpayer funds. We're facing sharply reduced funding for our district, as you know, in the coming years. Our class sizes are rising, services such as counseling in our schools are shrinking. So I would really like to encourage Ryan in his beginning efforts to examine these CalCard expenses and to ensure that tax funds are spent wisely. It seems like $13,000 a year may not be much, but I volunteer in a homework club that has 25 students, first grade through fifth grade, with one EL aide in charge of helping them with their homework. It's a lot of different kinds of homework that these students need help with. You could fund two aides in homework clubs for that amount of money. Those are direct services to students. You know, it's not Ryan's responsibility alone to look at those expenses. As board members, you have a fiduciary responsibility to ensure that our tax dollars are used in the best possible manner for the education of our children. I urge this board to help the district office develop uniform policies for all employees. And I use our motto, all means all. concerning expenses for food when not traveling out of the area. If one meeting at the district office can buy funds, can buy food, then all district employees, including teachers, should be able to buy meals on district expense. You need to have a policy for all. In these days of shrinking district funds, this is an opportunity for you as a district to set a very positive example of prudent use of funds across all staff. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Neuhauser.
Okay.
And seeing no one else, we will move on to our business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so we have kind of an extra welcome surprise from Mabel Verthaler. Morro Bay High, as the board remembers, hopefully large donation for scholarships for Morro Bay High School students. So they actually just finished the estate, and they put an additional $227,000 into that account.
What's the total?
So it's about $1.3 million for Morro Bay High School scholarships. So it's a just unbelievable gift to the kids at Morro Bay High. So that happened this week. The AEDs that the board allowed us to purchase for all the school sites came in this week, and so we'll be sending those out to all the school sites. So every site will have an AED on the campus. We did purchase the extra pads for smaller children for all of the elementary sites. So those will go out, and so it's a really positive thing that I think I talked to the board about when I went through my CPR training. That it was, I feel that's an important thing for us to do. Other than that, the last thing is just the governor signed a bunch of laws over the past week. So there's a lot of things kind of coming at us now in terms of updates. And so often, what happens after the laws go through, the governor signs them, we'll start to see CSBA and different groups kind of tell us, what this means. So, I mean, everything from providing feminine hygiene products in bathrooms to, being able to have electric charging stations at school sites that are paid for through funds to our budget reserves, as well as things like not being able to shame students in terms of not being able to pay for lunches and those types of things. So just a lot of things that will but this in terms of just how that works. They also had one that was kind of an interesting that kind of goes along with our speaker today, where in the past you could never let people, after they go through the lunch line, drop off things that they didn't like, their milk carton or their apple, those types of things. So it looks like the governor signed a law where they can take some of those items that are non-perishable and give them to food banks or for other students, those types of things. So there's, again, a lot of things happening. We'll, kind of, as they come in, as we learn more about them, we'll, of course, be implementing those throughout the district.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And we're moving now on to the Education Services update with Mrs. McGrath.
Great, thank you. I wanted to let you know about a couple of things. Our site administrators had the opportunity to participate in a professional development that really looked at strategies for English language learners. So this was a great opportunity to kind of build site administrator capacity, and then they're taking back the model that was that we all participated in to also take back to their sites and develop that with their teachers. So a great job by Don Addis and Amy Shields in organizing that and really having everyone buying in and participating. So that was a great experience. Also just wanted to let you know, as well as the community, especially our parents, to know that the month of November we will have our Bright Bites survey. Looking for input during that time. That gives us input around technology use, access around instruction related to technology and digital devices. So please look for that parent survey to come home during the month of November. We really value that input. The student survey will go home in the spring, which allows us the opportunity to kind of corroborate the data related to that. So we look forward to parent input in that survey in the month of November. Thank you.
And that's just will be a paper survey. Will it also go out in any other form, any electronic?
It is a can be accessed in a digital format, and we have brainstormed with sites. Sites are really working on how do we ensure that we're getting, input from every family and the maximum amount of input that we can. Sites are handling that in different ways as far as having devices available at school sites and in offices and other places so that families can participate in the survey anytime they're at the school site during the month of November.
Excellent. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I'm so excited that we're working to find out what the access is for everybody within the district, all the families in the district. I'm concerned and hope that we're going to also reach out to parents who are maybe both parents are working, they work early, they work late, and they won't have time to come to the school site, they don't have capacity at home to do it, and find a way to put this maybe in other locations or find another way. And if they don't have access at home, then it sort of skews maybe the results. So I'm glad that the sites are going to work as hard as they can to make that happen.
Absolutely, yes. As I stated, that each site is brainstorming how to ensure that they're getting maximum results.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Thank you. I just want to make a couple comments here. First is I really, as a former ESL teacher, English language arts teacher, and so forth, appreciate the distance the district has come over the years in not only improving ESL instruction or English language instruction, but also encouraging administrators to become more supportive of the teachers. I think that's huge. I think we've come a long way, and I want to make sure that I acknowledge the folks that have been so responsible for that. The other thing, I just wanted to make a quick comment on Mabs Verithaler, who I had the pleasure of working with, and I'm just so delighted that she's going to be remembered for her generosity. She's a great lady, and this is a great bequest. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. And we're moving on then to a Measure D update with Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just really quick, since we had our study session last Thursday and kind of went over kind of an update, the board got to go down to Slough High, see the old gym, I believe, with Mr. Stewart, so that's exciting. We're finally kicking off some classroom projects. So that's, for me, you know, the push, and, you know, that's what we're all about. So the J-Wing is going to start on October 25th, so which, again, is, you know, right around the corner in terms of getting going with those, that whole classroom wing. And again, we're going to start seeing the phasing. So Student Support Center next, office moving out, turning that into classroom. So it's going to start kind of really snowballing in terms of big projects, which is very exciting, all the, you know, few years of planning and preparation and getting to this point. So we're excited about that. And then, of course, we have the annex project, the 12 classroom building at Slough High. For the board's approval tonight for the GMP. So another thing that's, again, very exciting to get classrooms going outside of the temporary classrooms, of course, at Slough High. And then lastly, we are, as I said at the last board meeting, we are doing some work at PB. So they're actually going to be on site on October 23rd to kind of kick off. We're going to do some beautification on the outside of that campus and in the quad area, getting some tables, different things that, you know, that had come out in the student the student survey meeting that we had together. And that's it.
Thank you. We are moving on to item number 9.01, which is the determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials, presented by Mrs. McGrath. Thank you. We previously held the public hearing related to this, and the district is currently sufficient in all areas.
Thank you. I'll move approval of resolution number 04-17-18, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
No resolution.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, it's a roll call vote. Excuse me.
Want to go to the public?
And
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we are moving on to item number 10. Excuse me. Yes, 10.01. Hello, Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. As you know, state education code requires that the Board of Education annually approve school site plans that use state and federal funding to support their school's goals. A copy of each site plan for student achievement was presented for the board's review and hopefully for approval tonight. As you know, each school site council oversees the site planning process. The team of our school site councils includes school staff, parents, community representatives, and at the secondary level, students. Single plans for student achievement move our schools forward in accomplishing their stated vision by incorporating goals upon an analysis of student achievement data and by committing funds to the content of those plans. Each of the school plans contains measurable student achievement metrics as well as trimester or quarterly checks for progress. This allows the district as well as site leadership to work together to analyze progress on the goals throughout the school year. High school administration also has incorporated the Western Association of Schools and Colleges, or WASC, goals within the document. All plans are organized around the five district focus areas of student achievement of LCAP-identified student groups, culture of care, technology and innovation, and data culture. Actions from the District Local Control Accountability Plan, or our LCAP, are included in each one of the site plans, which demonstrates an alignment of those goals. Each school then includes site-specific actions within those goals. This allows all schools to continue to move toward common five focus areas in unison, but with some autonomy to reach those goals in different ways, depending on the specific needs of their sites. The SPSAs, or single plans, serve as a guiding document for school sites so that they can create goals with measurable student achievement metrics, actions to achieve those goals, and a culture of ongoing improvement. Mrs. McGrath and I are here tonight if you have any questions regarding those.
Mrs. Sheffer. Thank you. So I have three questions. So first is, when reading these, I was noticing the extent and depth and breadth of before and after school programs, which are wonderful and meaningful and provide many opportunities for our students. I'm interested in knowing about, it seems to me that they, many of these things occur before school or after school. They are school-sponsored events, so that would involve transportation. So am I correct that at most, if not all of our sites, there could be buses or vans or other whatever modes of district-related transportation up to four times a day for before school, regular arrival time, regular departure time, and then late departure due to activities? Is that correct?
So it's actually being used at about five of our schools.
Okay.
Right now, so not all the schools utilize it. I believe it's Del Mar, Monarch Grove, Laguna, Loams, and Morro Bay High School. Okay. So I asked Annie Sharp to, you know, kind of about that type of thing. So cost of that in terms of probably driver time throughout the year is about $30,000 for the extra time drivers, you know, to go back basically. So in particular at the middle schools, I believe it allows a lot of kids to do activities after school. So to be in sports, to be, you know, not just academic clubs, but lots of different activities who maybe wouldn't be able to. So that's right now, that's those are the groups that are actually utilizing it at this point.
Yeah, I'm not questioning the value in any sense. It's just from a cost standpoint.
It's about $30,000.
So we need to be more aware of that. And then I noticed on the secondary plans, there was no, since I read the elementary plans first, and then I sort of was struck that the secondary plans, the timelines are not complete, nor are the costs. And because we approve budgets and pay attention to that, I'm curious, when are the costs built in somewhere? Are funds allocated per site to handle these things, or when will we know the costs involved in
the plans? So within the secondary sites, there's two aspects. One is the district
kind of action steps that take place, which do align to our LCAP and LEA plans. So we see the budget related to that. The site steps are then their site budgets determining how they're going to implement that. A lot of times that's not a cost related, but I do think it would be a great addition to add to that of when it is a site step and it does have a cost related to it. I think it's a good addition for us to add a budget line there. So I appreciate that suggestion and that addition, and we'll make that change. On the timeline, we just handle it differently, elementary to secondary. So for secondary, what we do is we put in quarterly checks. So I work with the secondary principals, and you see the kind of Q1, 2, 3, 4, those columns that were there. So what happens is the secondary principals work with their leadership teams, and they check on the action steps at each quarter, and they will actually type into those boxes and keep track of what actions have taken place and what have they done at each step along the way to monitor progress and check on, you know, are they keeping a focus there and actually completing it, and where are they with those steps. So it's just still a timeline, just handled slightly differently.
Okay. So at the elementary it's more predictive, and at the secondary it's more kind of a checklist or something.
Right.
Things
are,
okay.
Right.
And then my last question is, it would be helpful to me if I notice that we have the goals. If we could, not this year, but perhaps beginning next year, have the, let's see, we're in the 17-18 year, have the 17-18 year goals and the achievement, so we know whether they met those goals or if not, you know, where things fell, if they exceeded or fell a little short, and then know what we're looking at for then 18-19, because I realized that the only way I could determine whether they'd met what they'd set out in last year's plans would be to get out, find last year's plans, and then compare those numbers. So it would make it a little richer for me to know how they did last year, how they thought they'd do, what they achieved, and then go off of that for this year, what they think they'll achieve. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally.
At all?
I think Amy and I are right with you. If I could speak for Amy, we totally agree. So as we have now established consistent student groups that we'll be looking at, we agree. You can see on the data points we started towards that where it said results and goal. And I totally agree with you. If it said goal, results, goal, it would start to establish kind of the pattern of what's the goal we set, did we reach it or not, now what is our goal. So I think our thinking is aligned with you, and we're definitely headed that direction.
Okay, thank you very much.
May I follow up on that?
Yes, Mr. Millar.
I noticed on it's page 9 for Pacific Beach, their plan, it has the CAA SPP 3rd through 8th and 11th testing, and it has the results for 2016 for the various subgroups. And then it has the goal for 2017, which are set out, and it's the 5% increase that was the overall goal. But then there are no results for for Pacific Beach for 2016. So I was confused.
Right.
By that chart, just by that chart specifically.
Sure, I understand. So Mr. Deller and I spoke a lot about the CASP results for Pacific Beach. It's, to be honest, not that great of a measurement for a continuation high school. So you're looking at only 11th grade students at that level, and you have students coming in and out, right, finishing maybe before they take that. It could be that when they take that test, they could have been there a year or 2 years. It could have been they were there 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that great of a measure. Unfortunately, we're still trying to wrap our heads around what are some great measures for Pacific Beach to focus on credits, which they've done a great job at looking at credits, attendance, suspension, things like that. And they're also working on how can we also measure the learning. So right now, what Mr. Deller and I spoke about is, let's hold it in there for now, and then let's look at what's a better measurement for Pac Beach down the road so that we can measure our students also learning while they're there and not just a measure of accumulating credits. What happens with that one is it could be that a student, maybe a student wasn't there, it's such a small number, it's probably numerically insignificant and therefore not reportable.
Okay, thank you. That helps me understand it. I hope you find that measure.
Mr. Unger.
Well, first of all, I just want to congratulate the staff and the school site councils on the really amazing amount of work that they did. I appreciate that we have kind of a template that we're using, but within that template, each school, although there were very, very major consistent themes that they want to try to accomplish, that each school had their own spin on it. I think that was really, really impressive. I'd also like to give some kudos to Joyce Hansen out at C.L. Smith for color coding the achievement data that Mrs. Sheffer was specifically talking about. That made it much easier to read and to understand. So that said, one of the things I'm really curious about on the elementary side are the different skills tapped by the BAS versus the SRI in terms of our reading scores through, you know, in our common assessments. What I noticed was there were really a consistent discrepancy between the BAS scores for the younger students, K through third grade students, versus the SRI scores that we were getting for everybody else after third grade. So some questions I had is it the nature of the two tests or the nature of the two evaluation instruments? That's kind of my first question. I have several questions related to this.
Well, the BAS, the benchmark assessment right. system that we give to all kindergarten, first, and second grade students three times a year is a one-on-one teacher and student assessment where you find that just right spot of where that child is reading. You record their reading behaviors. It helps you plan for next steps in instruction. It's our very best assessment that we have in helping children learn how to read. With the goal being that by third grade we've launched them there, the SRI is a whole class can go into a computer lab or go open up their Chromebooks and do that assessment all at the same time because it's an online assessment, but it's much more of a... it gives you a Lexile level, so it gives you a range, basically, of where that student is reading at. It doesn't give you all the detailed information that a teacher gets from sitting one-on-one with a student. So it's a starting point for students who are showing up with that Lexile level, and this is about a 30-40-minute test. Then a teacher can, and we have funds allocated in the LCAP, move forward and provide an individualized BAS assessment if they wanted to get that additional information for that student. But it's a quick and dirty. It absolutely doesn't give you the same kind of information. And it's language dependent, meaning it's a closed test and students read a passage and there'll be blanks of what the words are. And if you're an English learner and you don't have the academic vocabulary, this is not going to give us the best information about where you're at as a reader. But it's a good, quick dipstick into where kids are at.
So that was kind of leading to my second question, which of those assessments best correlates to reading achievement, and it's the BAS.
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. And then the third question is for me is, so... which one, and I think you've answered the question, gives the teachers the best information to inform their instruction?
For our youngest readers, it's definitely the BAS. That gives you that what should tomorrow's instruction look like best based on the information I get on that child today. Now, with our kids that get older, the BAS is, I wouldn't say it's less effective, but it takes longer to give.
Right, yeah.
The stronger your reading skills, the longer it's going to give you to take that assessment. And when we think of older, more competent readers, some of the skills that we're testing in reading or that we want to know is what they can do in a compare and contrast of two books that they've read or two passages, it gets much more complicated, and that either neither the BAS or an SRI could give us that information. And with that said, I'll just add that it's one of the things we recently surveyed our teachers related to our report card assessments, and it came out flying high that our teachers want us to look at developing assessments that are aligned to our, you know, fairly newly adopted reading curriculum.
Right. So I was wondering if the SRI is in some ways predictive of CAF scores, and it seems like it's only sort of moderately predictive. Is that fair?
I think
fair?
That's a good word for it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's certainly not the end all.
And then finally, the other thing I just wanted to give kudos to, and I think I'd like to thank Marilyn for really making sure that we are aware of this, is with the Bright Bites survey, really all the schools attempting to move to 100% internet access for our students, whether in or out of school. So thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Well, just right on the heels of that little small accolade from Mr. Unger, I would like to point out that he and I are involved in a running gun battle, because I believe that the color coding that was so helpful was produced by Sinsheimer.
Oh.
And you keep insisting that it was Smith. So the person who can actually provide the answer to this will get a hearty handshake from me. But it was very helpful to have the color coding, because your eyes get tired when you're reading so much of this, and that really made it much easier to understand. A couple of things. Laguna Middle School, I'm appreciative. Let me begin by saying I'm appreciative of the tremendous volume of work that went into this on the part of all of our schools, each of our school sites, and it gives us a lot of valuable information. When we got to the secondary level, pardon me, Laguna began theirs by saying that they have 32% of their students are on free and reduced lunch program, or children in poverty, and 7% of their students participate in their English learner program. But that was the only one of the secondary schools that gave me any indication of what their demographics were with regard to EL and SED. And I would like to ask that in the future we might request that information from all of those schools. Also at the secondary, when you're dealing with the elementary schools, they show the funding sources for the things that they're doing, whether it be district-funded, LCAP-funded, PTA-funded, donation-funded. And when you get to the secondary schools, there was no indication of the funding source for any of the specific line items that they were addressing. So I wonder if we might see that next time, too, just for my own information.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's similar to Ellen's comment, and we'd be happy to add that.
Yeah, and I wanted to piggyback that onto Ellen, but people came in between us, and so I wasn't able to do that. Because it's really apparent that some of our schools are able to do so much more than others with their donation accounts and their PTA accounts. And when you look through this, you see that, you know, that disparity exists very clearly. And
Marilyn, may I clear up the dispute between you and Chris?
Yes, thank you.
I would like to point out that Sinsheimer did some highlighting in yellow, but Smith used multiple colors in the report.
I just wanted to put this to rest
while we were here. As
thank you so much. And my eyes responded to the Sinsheimer yellow.
So
they are the stingers, aren't they? Well, there you go. And I didn't even
the
notice.
The superstars use a variety of colors. The stingers use yellow.
Well, accolades really to both schools for differentiating in that way, so that it was
I would hope
easier
that you
to
and
understand.
You and Chris will disarm yourself. And
no, we've already kissed and made up, but thank you for doing that.
And Mr. Buckman.
Oh, thank you. Try and bring this closer. Just three comments. So we have gone through the LCAP, and we've gone to the community, and we've set goals, and we've used those to build the budget. So my question, I guess, is now that we've done the single site plans, is there a way to talk about or a way to correlate the goals just so that the goals sort of match what we came up with for the LCAPs? So this, we had some broad goals that we came up with district-wide. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing are you seeing a correlation?
Yes, the goals directly come from the LCAP, the LEA plan addendum, and then align with what you'll find in each single plan.
Okay.
And it could be that the site then adds some site-specific ones, but you should find consistency from the single plans to the LEA plan addendum.
And I did, but I thought sometimes the sites were looking for a higher percent of improvement than what that we were looking at district-wide. So that was the reason for my question. And so,
which, you know, with site autonomy and these being developed by school site councils, they have that freedom to say, we're going to go for it with whichever goal it might be. And some stick pretty close to what the district is doing, and some go for it.
You know, and I really thank you for mentioning school site plan, the school site councils, because that goes to my second comment. And this might maybe more just of a comment. So much work went into this from the staff, the principals, but especially from the school site councils. And I was looking at the charts of the membership in the school site councils, and often, you know, I ask questions about parent involvement, you know, where the parent funding comes from and all of these things. And I was glad to see within the goals and the activities that the school sites are planning, lots of reliance on parents' input and community input and giving feedback and seeing how things are going. The one thing that jumped out at me is there is among our schools, there's only one school site council that has a community member sitting on it. So I guess this is to the people that may be watching or to others, that my hope is that as you get involved in giving that community feedback, and as a parent you get involved, that you understand how important it is to be on a school site council and how much influence you can have. And quite honestly, maybe a personal thing would be is if we have the community on the sites, they're going to have to be able to see how much work is going on, what's different, the classroom, even the designs that were coming up are different. And I just urge people to sign on to the school site councils. And I know we have at least two members on the board who spend a lot of time on their school site councils, maybe more.
I believe I can speak
yes,
to three of the board members
thanks.
Who've served on school site councils that I'm aware of, and I couldn't agree with you more. And with that said, it's really difficult to make it mm-hmm. Available, accessible for parents and staff all at the same time and make that happen. And I have to tell you, sometimes there's a trust that's already in place that some of our parents, we wish they would, but don't go there for some of these committees as long as they're kept informed and mm-hmm. involved in the process.
Right.
And I think that happens through our parent surveys. But back to what you said, I couldn't agree more that we love when we can get parents to be there and sit at the table with us as we're developing our single plans.
And hopefully you understand, it's not the parents that I'm hoping will come forward. It's community members that are not directly related, because in a community like ours, so many of the residents have no direct link to our schools. They don't have grandchildren. They don't have students in our schools. And so my hope is to see that activity come up among community members. I had one other thought, and I thank Dr. Prater for helping with this, and it's the amount of work that's going on at the school sites to prepare for these goals and the steps that it takes to do the LCAP. And so I just wanted to go through this if I can, just really quickly. October and March, is when we gather information for the, this is just a ton of work for staff. October and March is when we gather materials for the LCAP goals. March and April is the window to develop the goals. May and June is the window for the board feedback. June is the board's approval. The CASP tests are administered in April and May. We get those results back in September. The school site, the school single plan achievements are developed in spring and summer. It just goes on and on. And I have to thank staff for putting up with state requirements and all of this other stuff and doing a great job educating the student.
And Mr. Millar, I just would like to add that I was struck by rather lofty goals that some schools have set for themselves, and I can see others are very high marks to reach. And so I was happy to see that among their notions of how they're going to accomplish that goal, summer school came up again and again. And I think that's, I hope we're driving that bus home to our parents and to our school sites, that that is a great opportunity to keep the slide from happening backwards and to keep them moving forward. And also just other programs that were new to me that I was pleased to see that Cal Poly is offering the one-to-one buddies for our EL students and doing some work with them. And that the beyond the empowerment teams at schools like Baywood and the there was another program I wanted to call out to the peaceful playgrounds, and there are just some great what many people might consider accessories to academics, but I find them so important to get for engagement for students. So band and art, artists in the classroom, and so some of the things I think it's really great to have these high academic goals, and where you're doing a great job of helping them reach those goals. And I just hope that we can also find time, as we are, as we can see from the plans that we have in front of us, to also celebrate the rest of the whole child. So, and I think that's it for that one. Thank you so much. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on that before we, any public comment? Okay, we do need to take a vote.
I'll move approval of the the SIPSIS, approval of the 2017-2018 single plans for student achievement.
I'd like to second that motion, please.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 10.02, Common Ground Advisory Task Force update.
Good evening, Board. Knowing that this is a pretty big agenda tonight, I will try to keep this concise. No doubt we live in complex times, and nothing illustrated that greater than last spring when the Slow Expression student newspaper at San Luis Obispo High School put together a wonderful May edition of the student newspaper. And in that edition, there were several articles celebrating and acknowledging the culture there at San Luis Obispo High that was admittedly becoming more and more inclusive of LGBTQ youth. And the articles that were in the newspaper that month reflected and celebrated that. The complexity of this, however, came when a teacher from San Luis Obispo High School decided to write a letter to the student editor. And he shared a different viewpoint. And then that viewpoint was then posted on the student newspaper website. At which point, the clouds opened up and all the fury of that comment and commentary was unleashed, and we as a school district were confronted with some pretty complex matters around freedom of speech, student expression, staff expression, right around the First Amendment issues. It was a very difficult set of circumstances to manage and to understand, and yet I feel necessary insofar as allowing our district to move forward through these difficult and complex issues. As a result of that particular issue, we dug deep and we developed a 10-point plan to respond to the very disrupted and upset community, and in many cases, rightfully so. That said, I realized at that time that we had a lot of work to do, a lot of work to communicate our mission as a school district and to sort of shepherd our community and our students and our staff through these complicated issues. And I don't see those issues getting any less complicated. In society, society is confronted in America with very divergent viewpoints, beliefs, and values, and yet we as a public school organization have a duty and a mission to educate all kids, regardless of their circumstances, regardless of their beliefs, and their backgrounds. And for that, I am honored to be a part of this process. So a part of the 10-point plan was to come up with a common ground advisory task force. And I'm here tonight to tell you where we're at in that process. It's been far more challenging than I ever imagined to kind of put this together and move it forward. And the reason it's complicated and challenging is because at the core of this is trying to take complicated issues, combustible issues that we're confronted with that land in our laps in schools, and try to see through them with wisdom and with good judgment using a group of people that tend to have different viewpoints. So the Common Ground Advisory Task Force is a process, a group that I have put together and I'm putting together, and we are in the process of reaching out to those people and getting their commitments, their agreements, and I wanted tonight to let you know where we're at and what we're about to do. So I know you know this, but for the sake of the public, I'd like to kind of go through what it is. The purpose of the Common Ground Advisory Task Force is designed to provide the superintendent a sounding board, find common ground suggestions through civil discourse on controversial issues, provide policy and administrative feedback, suggestions, if you will, regarding religion, sexual orientation, free speech, harassment, and related policies. So the board, one of your primary purposes, as you know, is to establish policy. And what I would like to do is take these very controversial, difficult issues and get feedback from this group of divergent thinkers and provide you with recommendations as to how we can improve them, how we can improve our practices, to make sure that all kids, regardless of their background, their circumstances, feel valued and respected in our schools. The composition of this group is no more than 20. It's a cross-representation of civic and religious interests, including all major religions prominent in our community, free thinker non-religion leaders, for which there are many in our community, educational leaders, including administrators and teachers, parents and students, and within this group we'll designate a leader, a committee leader. I've identified a company called Collaboration in San Luis Obispo. The leader of that particular, the founder of the company, his name is Michael Gunther. He's very well regarded and respected. And they have agreed to facilitate this process in their facility. And I've been meeting several times with them. And we'll also, as a part of this committee, include myself and Mike Smith as the neutral facilitator. He'll become the legal expert, if you will. Because these are combustible, controversial issues, we need to make sure we have an anchor in the law. The ground rules, that is clearly an advisory role, that making recommendations to the superintendent is their role. Okay? That the superintendent will determine if those recommendations will reach the board and align with the rest of the feedback that we see within the group. That the superintendent will provide those final recommendations to the board as part of our LCAP process and fold that in finally for a final decision by the Board of Education. The meeting structure will meet monthly beginning in November and hopefully work through July. Now, I have to be completely candid with all of you. We may not make it to July with this group. I think we will. But it's a difficult group when you put very passionate people who represent entirely different vantage points in the same room around these controversial topics. The common ground, of course, are the students. That all kids, regardless of where they come from, deserve to have an opportunity to thrive, deserve to feel respected. We have that on us to make sure that happens. And this group is going to help us achieve that and provide suggestions. And we'll begin meeting in November, and I'm looking forward to that process. And I want you to know, Mike Smith, our attorney, reached out to me last week and said that someone had reached out to him because a fairly influential person in California, former superintendent and now part of a California foundation that provides funding for efforts that are innovative and courageous. And Mike Smith believes that if we connect the dots, we might have an ability to have this fully funded through that organization. And I will provide more information to you as I learn more. But I believe this is a good start. I believe, and I wanted to let you know, we've identified three topics to cover this year in those meetings. The first topic is the First Amendment. Freedom of student expression, staff expression, and how the laws and the rights intersect. The second topic that we'll cover, and each topic will cover two meetings of approximately 3 hours. The second topic will be on the impact of social media and how that influences. We're talking cyberbullying. We're talking conversations that occur in the cloud, so to speak, that negatively and or positively influence how kids feel about themselves at school. And the third topic is inclusivity and what that looks like in such a diverse culture and environment that we live in. And so we're going to tackle those three topics. We're going to look at our policies, we're going to look at the law, and we're going to look at best practices. And you can hear it in the students. You can hear Rutik talking about efforts being made to include kids, to include differences in our cultures and student buy-in. And Sierra tonight talked about, in her own way, ways in which Morro Bay is trying to reach out to all different types of students. So with that, I'm excited for where this will go. I think it will it will evolve, but it will give us as a district an opportunity to tap into all members, all different factions of our community, and hopefully land in a way that that gives us a place to have difficult conversations with a divergent group of people and come out in a forward-thinking way on behalf of students. And that's my update. I'm ready to field any questions you might have.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I am so excited about this. I think the community is ready for it, and I think you've touched it. And I think that there's going to be great work that comes out of this. The ability to be nimble and get this discussion out into the community in an open way, I think, is just great. I appreciate your focusing on identifying some of the groups, and within the plan that we have this bullet point that's provide policy and administrative feedback regarding religion, sexual orientation, free speech, harassment, and related policies. And my only question is, I hope that there will be an opportunity at some point to discuss the needs of those students facing their own stresses and based on personal characteristics such as income, race, and ethnic background. So I don't know when you'll be able to find time to do that. But
well, thank you for that, Mr. Buckman. It's true and it's insightful. That's that third topic of inclusivity. will be a key factor in bringing in all those differences in different groups, and certainly the socioeconomic barriers are significant, especially around socialization, integration of friendships and ideas. It's a big deal. Yeah.
Mrs. Schiffer.
I just have a quick question. I see on your list the task force, you have all the various groups being represented. Have you filled all the slots? Are there names associated with each of these spots now?
There are.
Okay.
I've been working at this since August, maybe even July, and the list has changed multiple times. And we're in the process of solidifying the names, solidifying the asks.
Okay.
And so we have, hopefully by the end of next week, we'll have confirmation for each person. I've had to reach out to a number of people this, and I think we're going to be in a good spot. It's amazing when you are able to talk to someone and walk them through this, that they're the personal courage of people with strong convictions. I'm floored by people's willingness to step up into this challenging situation.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
I would just like to add that I think this is a really important opportunity to model for students that there is such a thing as civil discourse, and that regardless of what they may be seeing elsewhere and in the news, we can create that opportunity here. And I just wanted to credit you with coming up with this idea in the first place. It's a brilliant response to a very complicated situation we found ourselves in, and it's a great way to go forward in the future with input from our community and, very, very civil discourse on these ideas. So thank you.
Thank you.
Moving right along to item number 10.03, proposed revisions to board policies.
I was going to move approval of board policy 0410.
The non-discrimination, didn't we just jump in?
Mr. Unger?
I'll second that, and I do have some discussion.
What happened to
Mr. Buckman, were you going to add to that discussion?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm just confused where we are on the agenda. I thought we were at 10.03, which would be philosophy.
0410.
Right.
Second reading.
Okay. I thought I heard non-discrimination is a subhead. Okay.
So this is item number 10.03.
Right. I'm sorry. It's a subhead.
Board policy 0410. Mr. Millar is proposing.
Okay. Great. Okay. So if there can be some discussion, I would appreciate it.
Yes.
So there are a few things in here that I think maybe snuck by us, and I'm sorry that they did. I'd like to suggest some wording, if I can, and I don't know if we need to put it up or not. The third paragraph down, there's kind of a funny sentence in here. And so towards the end, it gives a list. Such notification shall be included in each announcement, bulletin, catalog, signed by parent, guardian, from the annual notification handbook. And I just think that what we meant or what we might want to do is change this to such notification shall be included in each announcement, bulletin, catalog, parent annual notification, and on throughout, so that it's all consistent.
It's otherwise awkward. I agree.
Yeah, it's awkward.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. And then just a little further down, there's a section on about AIDS and services for individuals with disabilities. And towards the end of that, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch this last time, these aids and services may include but are not limited to qualified interpreters or readers, assistive learning devices, note takers, written, and it's the original wording is taped text, and I'm not sure how much taping goes on anymore, so my proposal would be written or thank you.
Right.
No, it's fine. You got it right on the head. That's
recorded
great. Written or recorded materials and just include it and just drop the tape text. So those are just some things. I don't know if you would accept a friendly amendment to the motion.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. So thank you.
So would you like to restate the motion or just we'll make the friendly amendment?
I'll move approval of the board policy with all of those amendments.
And I'll continue with my second on that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Unger with modifications. All in favor?
Aye, no by the way.
we would go to the public, but there is no one
still
here. That passes. It's a 7-0.
Thank you. On board policy 6145, I did want to bring back one comment that Mr. Pinkerton thankfully covered for me last time. So I believe it was Mr. Quesenberry that brought up the question about within the eligibility requirements. And so you'll find that on page B, number one, that it said, I think you brought up a question about the not having an F in any course. This is an extra requirement that was added. And Mr. Pinkerton did check with athletic directors as well as site administrators, and they agreed with you that they would love that phrase that Ms. Holmes here is going to highlight for you, not have an F in any course, eliminated. So, of course, that is up to your discretion, but they, I think, as your suggestion was for us to look into that, Mr. Quesenberry, and we did check, and they agreed that having that additional requirement on top of what CIF requires, they would agree in eliminating that.
Well, then I'll move the elimination of the phrase, not have an F in any course.
So are you making a motion?
I'm making a motion to eliminate that from that board policy.
So
is it effective with that?
Yeah. With that phrase eliminated, struck from the board policy. So I'm moving the entire board policy with the exception of that phrase, not have an F in any course. Delete that phrase. Thank you.
And I'm seconding.
So, Mr. Quisenberry made the motion to accept Board Policy 6145, deleting the phrase about not having an F in any course, and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Are we okay with that? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
I'd like to have discussion on the motion, please.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry,
sure.
Mr.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
So I actually wrestled with this a bit between the two meetings, and the problem for me, or what I was wrestling with, is that student learning is the reason that students are here, and it shows up in several our board policies. And eliminating this F, I would love to see it go away, but I'm not sure that it works for me if we take it out. So, and I hear now that staff is very much in favor of it. So I'm just going to go through my thinking and leave it at this. I was thinking that if the F were to stay in, that we could grant the probation if students, and this would probably go on the administrative in the AR, that students could then be enrolled in an online class, a tutoring, or something, and so that it's not a punitive thing, but it's a way to get support. But in hearing staff is ready to do away with it, I'll move along with that.
I don't know if it gives you any, to rest assured that sites definitely keep a strong eye on students with D's and F's and work consistently to help students through support, through tutoring, through teachers working hard in classrooms, through extra support before and after school, through online courses, through credit recovery, et cetera, to ensure that they are helping students that have D's and F's for sure.
And I totally appreciate that. Mm-hmm. As one board member, I guess, it's the setting of the maybe the tone or the climate that the board is, the expectation is that students are here to learn, mm-hmm. and that if an F is not acceptable, mm-hmm. unless it's tied to an increase in the learning process.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'll have to go with staff's better judgment on this.
Mm-hmm.
We have a motion on the table, Mr. Buckman, and you certainly may feel free to vote against it.
I'm sorry, Marilyn. I think I just said that, hearing what staff has to say, that I'll go along with this. So thank you, Marilyn.
I would just point out to anybody that's watching, the phrase in front of the F is that a student shall, that the student shall or must maintain a C average or better grade point average and be can be currently enrolled in a minimum of four classes. So Mark, I think hopefully that phrase in front will also put your mind at ease, because clearly we want the students to have a 2.0 average with the possibility of probation or some exceptions.
And I appreciate that, Chris. My thinking and my struggle with this again was setting a tone and setting an expectation, and I understand what you're saying. What I was wondering if the board or staff was interested in keeping this in there and then turning it into, rather than punitive, to turning it into an opportunity. So what I'm hearing from staff, and thank you from my fellow board members, is that that's in there. So I will support the motion as it stands. Thank you.
Okay. So, okay, are we aware?
A motion and second.
We're good. The motion has been made and seconded, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And so it's now unanimous. Good. Thank you. That was a good opportunity to have that conversation. And now we move on to 10.05.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify quickly also, I believe there were some questions at the last regular meeting about the process used, by CSBA and also by our district in order for policy to arrive here. So I'd like to give you just a quick rundown of what happens through that process so that you know that it's a thorough process and that there's a lot of thought and different input given related to this. So in order for policy to be brought forward for your consideration, these are the steps that take place in a review process. So first of all, Gamut has a team of policy consultants on staff, and they're responsible for reviewing new legislation that might impact education. The team includes two attorneys, a PhD in education, and two general experts. A consultant works on the policy alone, makes suggested revisions based on the new legislation. The team gathers for a review of that. After the team's review, the policies referred to CSBA's in-house legal team. It does come back for policy review team for further review, changes then before it becomes part of CSBA's quarterly release. That quarterly release arrives to Val Harrigan, and Val then distributes that information, and it will note if it's a legal required change or if it's a matter of option or you have a choice related to that change. So then our internal process takes over from there. Within that internal process, a memo is distributed to either the cabinet or department heads to review the area of their own responsibility. A director will then make necessary revisions. Of course, if it says this is new law, then we don't have a lot of option, and that is put in there. If it says optional or you have some choice, then they kind of make that decision, sit down with me to review that. And then we note the Gamut suggestions in red. Then the second step would be, if needed, which is not always the case, often not the case, but if needed, we would gather additional input for any legal representation that we have, maybe Lozano Smith or Dora Dome, depending on the topic. Then the subcommittee then looks over that, and suggestions from the subcommittee are noted in purple. Okay, so red from Gamut, purple from the subcommittee. If we had to receive additional legal advice, that would be noted in green. Like I said, typically we do not. Sometimes maybe like in the religious expressions, just as Dr. Prater mentioned, we needed legal advice around that. That would be noted in green. Then the revised policy is sent out in Friday Focus for your ability to review that. Feel free to provide any feedback to me, and then the policy is presented on the board agenda. So just wanted to review that process. I think there was questions about it last time, and I wasn't here to be able to explain that. Can I move forward with 6145? Yeah. Oh, 5131. My apologies.
Are there any questions on 5131 at this point? So we'll move on. Okay. Yes, thank you, Mrs. McGrath. Moving on to 10.06.
So 5131 is first reading, and did you need information or comments related to that one?
Mark.
No, I'm good.
Mr. Buckman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I turned it off. It's not.
Okay, so you'd prefer I move to 6145?
Mr. Quisenberry.
I will move the acceptance of
and that one's just the first reading.
I know, but
oh, okay.
But we waive the first, second reading.
I'm going to suggest that we waive the second reading.
Okay, we have. Is there a second on that? Is that what you're doing, Mr. Buckman?
No, I'm waiting for comment.
I'll second the motion.
Yes, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I would urge the board not to do things as serious as students' conduct on a single reading. There may be folks in the community now that have seen this that want to come forward that have not been aware that we're moving on a policy of this this importance. So I would ask the board to reconsider voting on this without a second reading.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
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 No.
And that passes six with one no. Six yes, one no.
Thank you. And I've lost track. Do I have one more?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Sorry, it is confusing.
Okay. Remind me of the number, Kim. Where am I?
51.45.3.
Yeah, 51.45.3. This is the non-discrimination harassment.
Thank you. Okay. On this policy, you will notice that Gamut had a legal requirement that we add the record-keeping portion there. You can note at the bottom, superintendent or designee shall maintain a record of all reported cases of unlawful discrimination, including discriminatory harassment, et cetera, and basically in how we keep those records. You can note in within purple that the subcommittee did make some clarifying points and improved some language, as well as you can see in the last paragraph where it says he, she shall report his or her findings and recommendations to the board. The original policy said after each review, and the subcommittee recommended that to be annually instead. And this is a first reading.
I'd like to make a motion that we do not approve this item. It's extremely important, especially in light of the Common Ground Committee, and I really believe that we should allow time for the 2 weeks for the community to comment. I see no reason for rushing into this. So my motion is to not approve this tonight.
Is there any discussion or a second?
I'll move waiving the second reading and approving board policy 51.45.3.
Is there a second to Mr. Millar's motion to waive the first reading and approve board policy 51.45.3?
I'll second.
Is a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Just a point of clarification. So we established the first motion died for a lack of a second.
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That was stated?
It wasn't stated.
Okay. I just wanted to make
but
sure that was stated.
Now.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will vote aye on the Mr. Millar's motion.
Okay. So that.
I will vote no. And Walter, if I can, just in terms of just discussion and clarity, I'm not concerned about the committee meeting again. What I'm concerned about is just an opportunity for the public. So it's you know, I'm just one voice on this board. So and I will be voting no. Thank you.
Okay, so that passes 6-0 with one.
6-1.
I'm sorry. 6 in favor and 1 opposed.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're moving on to 10.07.
Yeah, at the study session, we actually did a pretty extensive look at the annex GMP with the board. So we talked about some of the changes that happened over the past couple of weeks. So initially, this was something that was going to actually come to the board 2 weeks ago, but Mr. Holcomb, myself, Acme Construction Company had gone through the GMP. It was, you know, there are a few bid areas that we felt we needed to go back and get more bids on. And so at that point, we were about $8.6 million as an overall project number. So by rebidding a couple of the key areas, we were able to get that back down to about $8.2 million. There are still areas within the GMP currently. Again, this is the maximum price. So that's the most it would be that the board would be approving. We do feel that there are a couple of more areas that through the allowance section that we can kind of bring that down even farther to ensure that it stays within our budget. So about two meetings ago at our Measure D study session, we went over an overall budget with the board, kind of big picture where we're at. Mm-hmm. At that point, you know, the price tag for the annex was $7.65 million for construction, and then we had a contingency for about $535,000, so roughly about $8.2 million. So this new GMP that you have in front of you tonight is about the same, 8.2. So by bringing those down, our hope would be that we would be able to really bring this down about another $250,000. Specifically in the area of the AC paving, you'll see a couple of allowances, site utilities, as well as what we found out from DSA just last week, that some of the regulations in terms of the fire rating within the wings, that we may be able to look at some redesign efforts to bring those prices down. So those are things that we're currently already working on with the architect to see if there's a good point to, you know, some of the doors or windows or things like that where we can have some substantial savings. So again, excited to, with the, at least it's within that overall big budget realm. Of course, we would like to have it even cheaper, because we, you know, as we go through this process, especially these initial projects, we don't want to be over budget. So the J-Wing came in under. The annex, we feel pretty good in terms of where it's at. There are a couple of additive alternates that we talked about with the board. One is the tile roofing, which is about $140,000, as well as there's some laminate wall features. And so it's something that kind of the long-term, you know, wear and tear of a classroom, if you have the nice siding around, it just really lasts a long time and is very helpful, and it looks really sharp. So, but those are two things that, depending on these other areas and where they come in at, those are things that if we wanted to throughout the process, they're not ordered right away. They're not, you know, something that has to happen right at the beginning. So we can kind of see how these bids come in for the site utilities work, AC paving, and ensure that our budget is going to be where it needs to be before we move forward on those two kind of additive areas. Those are currently included, the tile roof as well as the laminate, inside this GMP that you have in front of you. So questions?
I see, Mrs. Sheffer.
I have a question. So mm-hmm. If we approve an amendment for $8,229,569.21,
yes,
as the guaranteed maximum price, what incentive does ACME have to go even lower if we've said we would pay up to this price?
Well, so the owner contingency is not something that they have control over. That's the board's contingency in terms of utilizing that. So that's one, right, in terms of control. The other part is ACME, too, is part of our overall. They're our contractor for all of our projects, so it's inherently important to them, too, that they can deliver down the road on all of our projects. So that's one of the positive things about having kind of tied into the overall process of all of our budgets. And then there's also our site responsibility, our project managers, Mr. Holcomb, myself, to ensure that they're getting these extra bids, that they're doing, you know, what they need to do to bring that price down. So they've been a great partner thus far in terms of looking at areas and doing what they can to try to make that happen. So it's incumbent upon us. I mean, at the end of the day,
to
make sure
to closely monitor,
absolutely, throughout the project,
to do our job on
absolutely.
All right. So, having heard that explanation, I see more lights on, but I would like to make a motion to approve amendment number one to the lease back contract with Acme Construction setting guaranteed maximum price.
I'd like to second that, please.
Okay. Mrs. Roger has a comment.
Thank you. I asked numerous questions of Mr. Holcomb and Mr. Pinkerton regarding this item because I had difficulty understanding how, when I looked at all the figures, we had reached our goal figure. But my questions were answered to my satisfaction, and so I'm going to go ahead and support this item. I just wondered if Mr. Holcomb had any particular comment to make before we vote.
You know, as opposed to a design bid build where you go out and bid a project, this is more of a process and it's never ending. What we have is in a colloquial sense, a living document that can go down, it can't go up. So we will continue to massage and apply pressure, look at scopes to see if they can be reduced. In other words, why would we spend money that gains us nothing? Then in the end of it, because ACME's contract is for the overall program, they want to make sure they finish the last project, so reducing this one is incumbent upon them if they regard their resume for this kind of process, and they do. So we'll see this number migrate downward. But it'll be more work involved. But in order to get the project started, we firm up the very first things first, and that's earthwork, foundations, framing, and continue to work on later items. So by the time we put tile roof on, if we're in trouble, bye-bye tile roof. Will change because it's bid both ways. So it is an active process that we'd be thrilled to bring you up to date with and study sessions and so on and so forth to see where this number is going. But I firmly believe it'll migrate downward.
Thank you. Okay. So we have any more discussion on the subject before we take a vote? Okay. We have
I'm sorry. It's
But we have Mrs. Sheffer and Mark, you seconded, right? Okay, yes. So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Very excited.
And we'll move forward to the action consent items. 11 point, please let me know if you want to pull any of these items. 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.03, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 11.04, disposition of surplus property. And 11.05, acceptance of donations.
Go ahead.
I'll move approval of item 11.01 to 11.05.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's a popular item. We're getting close to the end of the meeting. And we're moving on now to advanced agenda and then reports by board members.
I have another report.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I attended the Pacific Beach Back to School Night. Very good attendance. Parent and looked like grandparent attendance was there. There was a lot of interaction with staff and the individual parent groups and students, which is always kind of interesting about back to school night at Pacific Beach. And what else did I do? I did something.
Pool.
The pool. The grand opening. No, I'm going to defer and I'm going to let Jim report on the pool. Anyway, the TB event was very nice and that other thing was really good too.
Mrs. Sheffer, I just have a brief, we kind of went quickly on advanced agenda, but I have something that a request perhaps for Friday notes would be great. I noticed in reading the site plans, many little events or programs occurring that I wasn't familiar with, and I was hoping that perhaps a little paragraph or something in Friday notes about things like Born to Learn or the social skills or talk about touching or Peace Patrol. Some of these I'm familiar with, some I'm not, but I think it would be really fun to have a little explanation of some of these programs being offered at our sites. Nobody needs to go to any big trouble, no big presentations. Dr. Prater, I'm looking at you. just a little explanation of what they are, because I think these things add so much to the student engagement and the whole child experience of being at school. So I'd love to get a little more information. Okay, great. Thank you so much. And that's all from me. Thanks.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes, I would just like to say that Mr. Quisenberry will be giving us a report on an event that happened. I also attended the Pack Beach open house, and I agree with Walter. It was phenomenal. I would like to give a shout-out to the Pack Beach student, Rosendo Martinan, who did a great job cooking when I was there, and I understand that he's also already working at a restaurant. Mm. And then I have a very long announcement about an event that I'm going to just trim way down. October 27th and December 8th, the Tri-County Education Coalition is having two panels on the Deferred Action for Child Arrivals, also known as DACA. We have a lot of DACA students in our three counties, Ventura, Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo. The panels are going to be pretty exciting. Two people in particular I'd like to point out. Well, we've got teachers represented on the first one, school counselors and administrator, parents who have DACA children, our attorney, Lozano Smith, and some guy from Pacheco, Rick Mayfield, the principal. And I learned today that a national organization, Ed Trust, has heard about us and is 99% sure they're sending somebody to the 1027. The December 8th meeting, the December 8th panel will be...
Where's the first one, Mark?
Thank you very much. Who, what, when, where, why, and... Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. So much for a journalist. The first one will be at San Ynez High School, and I will get notification out to the board. The second one, which Walter will be at the Goleta Library, just for diversity, will feature elected officials from both state and congressional offices to answer questions. So we will come well-armed after the first panel to do that. So I invite all of the school community to come to those two events.
Mr. Quisenberry. Oh, Mr. Unger, but you're not going to say anything about swimming.
Come on, John.
I attended the ribbon cutting and opening of the Morro Bay High School Aquatic Center, a.k.a. swimming pool, and I was pleased to see everyone here, there, and that four board members decided that they were ready? No, three. I guess it was just three and our board secretary, I'm sorry, and alumna. We're bad shoulder. Okay. You know, you just pull with one arm and kick with your feet, you would have made it. Anyway, all decided to go in the pool, and I was very thrilled that I was not the sole representative to get wet. And I'm looking forward, and I told Rick Ernstrom this, I'm looking forward to jumping in the San Luis pool soon. Huh. Right?
Yeah.
The San Luis pool soon. And I think we all should go in on that occasion.
Yes.
Right. You're here.
Mr. Unger.
Bad shoulder. I came here for the Los Osos Middle School Build a Better Burger Day, which was, again, something that Aaron Primer did. For those of you who don't know what Build a Better Burger is, first, just for a little bit of explanation, there are very stringent food requirements that we have in terms of fats, salts, content, and things like that. And so what Mrs. Primer has done, which is just so amazing to me, is she has partnered with a local butcher up in Paso Robles, combined local beef with a mushroom, with, I guess, essentially pureed mushrooms to create burgers that have low fat content, high protein, and that really taste good. In fact, Sonic Burger is planning on using the beef mushroom recipe in a burger that's coming out within the next couple of months. Unfortunately, it wasn't us who encouraged them to do it. But at this Build a Better Burger Day was a representative from the National Mushroom Growers Association. It was such a big deal, and he shared this what Sonic Burger is going to be doing. Also, there was a woman from, I believe it was Montana, whose specific interest was about good, healthy eating for kids, and she was very impressed with the things we're doing. And then the Lucia Mar Food Services Director was here as well, and Lucia Mar is also planning on using the recipe that we have for burgers, meatballs, and things like that. The burgers were sold out within about 10 minutes, and really great stuff. And so I just want to, again, as always, congratulate our food services and Mrs. Primer and her department. They're really kicking it up, and we're so proud.
They're going to hold the same event at Pacific Beach, I believe, on the 25th.
That's great.
So they're excited about. She's working directly with Pacific Beach to really improve their food choices as well. So yeah. Unfortunately, Mr. Unker also told Aaron that we have an acre out by the airport.
So I knew it would get back.
Now she's got ideas about a farm and all kinds of things. So I thank you for that, Mr. Unker.
Anytime. I did point out to her that there would be that getting water out there could be problematic. And also, just something I forgot to say is we have locally baked buns as well. So they're really, really going all out. They're really doing a good job.
Awesome.
I figured I'd hear about that.
Oh, yes, Mr.
Just a point of personal privilege, I guess. Kim, I have a question on the next meeting of Measure D. 11:17 on my calendar is a Friday. And at the bottom of the 16th, I think, is Thursday. Yeah, so I just wanted to make sure I had it right and yes. Make sure this doesn't go out to the public. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Great. And I just wanted to add that the Morro Bay High School aquatic facility is quite refreshing, and my only regret about that day is not going in with all my clothes on, but that we couldn't bring Dr. Prater with us because we noted that he was wearing his nice leather shoes.
That's right.
So no shoes next time. And you're going in.
Yeah, you're going in, buddy.
So that's it for our meeting, and as Mr. Buckman stated, we are meeting again on the 7th of November, and then now on the 16th for our next Measure D study session. So good night.
Thank you.
Safe driving.
Thank you.